Welcome to Reading Your Way to Heaven. I am Gabe, and I'm here joined, as always, by my fantastic, phenomenal, fun-loving, free-ranging friend, Jason Spoolstra. I was running out of F-words.
Whoa.
Appropriate F-words. Appropriate
F-words. I felt like I was like a chicken. You know, like a free range here. I'm not cooped up.
Hey, man. Nobody puts Jason in a box. Nobody puts Jason in a corner.
Oh, man. Are you ready to continue to make some choices, Gabe?
Let's do it.
Let's make some choices.
Chapter 18, the 10th meditation on how the soul chooses the devout life. This is how we're actually going to make that choice here. I love how, like, St. Francis de Sales, I thought we did that last time. But no. He was presenting you with a choice last time. Mm-hmm. Now you're actually going to make the choice.
Yes, sir. He does a great job of unpacking and walking you through the step by brutal step.
Yes, step by every single step. Exactly. So we find ourselves once again imagining ourselves in an open plain, mm-hmm. alone with our angel, our guardian angel, and St. Francis asks us to imagine on one side the devil and the assembly that follows him, and on the other side God and Christ and all the good, begging us to choose that other side. And so, spoiler alert, we got to make a choice between these two things. And that's kind of what all this is about. What stands out to you as you were going through the different considerations?
Yeah, the biggest takeaway was the first consideration where it says the whole part of, you know, study the countenance and the miserable,
yes,
courtiers and the most admirable kings, some raging with fury, envy, and passion, some murderous in their hatred, others pale and haggard in their craving after wealth, and goes on from there, especially that craving after wealth. And I got to go on a little mini rant here, because during the last podcast, when we were recording to this one, I saw a priest post this, one of our favorites, Gabe, Joel Osteen, who I guess in a recent sermon, and someone was recording it on their phone via they're watching on television, so it's not the best quality. And I was trying to pull up the audio and I can't find a way to download it. But the gist of it was that Joel Osteen was making the claim that you can't glorify God by being poor, by being downtrodden, by being basically everything that the gospel says. He's like, no, if I brought my children up on this stage, mind you, he's a stage, not an altar or a sanctuary. But if I bring these two children, if I brought my two children up on the stage and they were dressed in raggedy clothes, that's a reflection on me. And you guys would think down on me and what a horrible father I'm being. No, well, I bless God by being wealthy and by looking good and having good things and expensive things and wealthy things. And I'm going, what? First of all, second, that is not Christ-like. Third of all, that's not the gospel. And this is outright heresy. And and then I went to read this and I went, this is Joel Osteen to a T. This is the same man who showed his true colors when Hurricane Harvey hit a few years ago and refused to open up his church. And the only time he did open his church was after the humongous backlash he got from it. But, you know, right down the street, Mattress Mac, also a Catholic, was like, yeah, no, come on in. Anyone, come on. I need to save souls. Like, I don't care if you're black, white, rich, poor. And that's, you know, one of the biggest things with a natural disaster, where a natural disaster does not care if you're wealthy, does not care if you're poor, you're black, Hispanic, white, man, woman, young, old, doesn't matter. And it will affect everyone. And really in those times of disasters really shows someone's character, really shows who is a Christian and who is not. And who is after wealth and who is after looking good and who is actually trying to live this out. And the same way here with hell and with heaven, everyone has a choice. Doesn't matter if you have a lot of money, no money, if you're young, old, you know, again, all of those factors, it doesn't matter. Because guess what? All of those diversity, there's going to be a great diversity in heaven because there's a great diversity in hell. And the last thing I'll mention about all of this is, oh, and it just escaped me. It just, the train left station without me on it.
Man, you're on a roll, man.
I know. Give me a second. Give me a second. Hang on. Okay. And the last thing is, it also reminded me of last week's Friday episode on the gospel about the rich young ruler. And how it all tied in with what I read chapter 19 and a few days later seeing Joel Osteen, where I'm like, dude, that's not what Jesus says. He says, sell everything, give everything away and follow him.
Doesn't he say something like, I don't know, it's easier for the camel to pass through the eye of the needle than for a rich man to get to heaven?
And then, like, I think I remember him saying in Matthew 5 when we read that chapter about blessed are the poor and the poor in spirit. But anyways,
sounds familiar.
I digress. The whole point of it is here exactly what Francis de Sales is saying is people, yes, murderers and those that hate, but it's also those that desire greed, desire, you know, lust, desire, you know, anything that's not of God, that they are at the beholden of the devil because the devil has fooled them. The devil has tricked them in his lies and has said, if you bow down and worship me, I will give that to you. Yeah. I will give you what you want.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it's not what you ultimately desire what your heart ultimately longs for.
So when I hit that line, study the countenance of the miserable courtiers of the most abominable king, I stopped there. I didn't keep reading. I just stopped. And I was closing my eyes. I was trying to imagine the people's faces. And I didn't go where St. Francis de Sales went. Instead, I went to people who had made, you know, these choices to serve themselves. I imagined these, like, this zombie-like crowd that was just utterly lifeless, that there was no joy, no vibrancy, but just lifeless. And so then I opened my eyes. I started reading again, and it talks about, you know, the different passions and the different raging. And then there was this line here that just hit me. It struck me so hard. I highlighted it. See how all alike are hateful, restless, wild. And so St. Francis de Sales is painting this image of this group of people that are just animalistic, that there's that, again, lifeless, but in a different way, right? That the light, the light of life is not in them, that they're purely succumbing to their urges, that they are a slave to that. And we all struggle with different things, and I know addiction is a real thing for a lot of different people in a lot of different ways. But if you've ever had to deal with anything that's like an addiction, or just even that's, you know, been a very bad habit that you've been trying to break, but it's just been so ingrained, it's so very hard. You really understand, like, the chains of sin, how they have a hold of you, because it's like your mind or your habits keep drifting towards this negative, and you try and fight against it, but you find yourself keep going to it, like you're being pulled back like the leash on a dog. And if you go with it, what you're doing is succumbing to the urge. And that's what I imagined, is this group of people that just succumb to urge over and over and over again, whether it be in rage, whether it be in passion and lust and greed and all of the vices, that these are no longer people, that these are the animals that are only in it to quench themselves and their own desires, but then the emptiness that ultimately leads. The next line, see how they despise one another and only pretend to an unreal self-seeking love. And I just shook. From the vividness of that in my mind, but also I also felt this immense sorrow for this group of people that that pursued pleasure, that pursued themselves, that pursued this earthly reward at the expense of this eternal consequence.
Absolutely. Yeah, and not to have the Catholic Church off the hook. We are more on the hook. In fact, that's what the Vatican II talks about, especially in Lumen Gentium, of how, you know, as Catholics, because we have the fullness of truth, we are more on the hook because we know better. And so I would be assured here that Francis de Sales is pointing the finger right at us as a Catholic Church here. Is that, like you said, I mean, that to me was my favorite part where he says, despise one another and only pretend to an unreal self-seeking love, self-seeking love. And how many people in the church today and not in the too distant future have fallen prey to that, have fallen into the sins of Satan and have completely destroyed parts of the church from within. Obviously not completely destroyed because, you know, Satan will never prevail against it, as Jesus has proclaimed. But
wounded for sure.
Severely wounded.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. All because they're pursuing their own selves.
Exactly.
You mentioned the natural disaster scenario, and I think you really stumbled on something in addition to whatever what you talked about, that whenever you see a disaster of this nature, there also tends to be this tremendous amount of chaos that follows it, and looting, and people running amok, vandalizing things, and not everybody, but there is that element present that there's this hateful restlessness, almost like that's just like a bubbling at the surface, looking for an excuse to jump out. And in the midst of this chaos, we see these kinds of things. So, oh my gosh, that it's just not good. No, I don't want that, you know. And so that leads us then to the next consideration. I think the line that grabbed me, as he's talking about all these examples for sure, is when he says, "See how such pious souls know how to combine their exterior and interior duties to love the earthly spouse with a diminishing devotion," as you mentioned earlier. But like the combination that like the exterior and the interior are combined together, that this is not just, you know, something that you say, you're not just talking the talk, you're walking the walk, that this is penetrating every aspect of your life, this love, this peace, this devotion, this joy. It manifests itself not just in the interior, but of course also in the exterior. It reminded me, I was praying the Divine Office, and I'm trying to pull it up real quick. So it's a piece from Saint Augustine on a treatise from Saint John, and he's talking about how. He's at the end, "I implore you to live with me, and by believing to run with me, let us long for the heavenly country." And I guess just to get to the point here, he's basically saying like that it's not enough to just have this prayer life. It's not enough to just long for the good that is heaven. But if it's sincere, if it's true, then it manifests itself in the way that we act, in the way that we live. And so this piece from St. Francis de Sales, specifically this part about the exterior interior duties being perfectly combined, I thought, oh my gosh, this is it. Like this is that happy balance. This is like the reality. This is what you see on the inside or outside is what's on the inside. You get what you pay for, kind of a thing. It's true, and it doesn't waver. And it's I guess perfect harmony.
The part right after that was the part that I underlined and really stood out most to me, and that I reflected on the most, where it said that basically where all these, they're listening to the voice of the Lord, all seeking to enthrone him more and more within their hearts. And, you know, we just celebrated in the church the Feast of Christ the King. And we are now in the season of Advent, and we are anticipating the birth of our King, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords on Christmas. And that just got me in that. It was a great start for Advent. That's what I felt in my soul of just, Lord, as I'm anticipating your coming on Christmas, and as we just celebrated Christ the King, your kingdom, your royalty, help me to choose you as my King, as my Lord, and that I will bow down to you as my King.
Absolutely beautiful. Yeah, I underline that part just as well. So you've got this sublime reality of heaven before you now, and pouring right into that third consideration. And I love this line here, the first line of the third consideration. Surely you have altogether renounced Satan with his weary, miserable assembly. Like I'm just gonna go ahead and like yeah, you've done that. Like you know. I know what I've done in terms of painting this picture for you, and no one would choose it. So I know surely that's the reality. Okay. But I thought this was just so good and real, and speaks to where so many people are at, and including myself at many different times, okay, so you're not with Satan. Okay. But nevertheless, you have not wholly attained to the King Jesus. We're all together joined his blessed company of devout ones. You have, and this is the line I highlighted, you have hovered betwixt the two. Yes. Yes. Like, I've told Satan no. Okay, great. But have you let go of yourself? Have you opened up your hands? Have you run all together, not just to turn away from Satan, but to run towards Christ? Run towards him, you know, like the rich young man. Did you sell off all your possessions, or are you still like hanging on to them and debating if you should, you know, sell them or not and turn away sad, or like, you know, like, what are you doing? Don't hover.
And so with number four and number five, they kind of speak for themselves. Four, I would, you know, if you haven't had a chance to listen, hopefully you already have with last week's chapter. I already kind of just, you know, made me think of what I said last week with St. Jose Maria Escrivá of, you know, as you have the saints and angels as spectators in your fight against the devil and the evil one. So do you have any thoughts or any thing for the choices?
No, it was just that firm resolution, right? Just that decry that I will never enlist in the company of Satan, but I will turn to sweet Jesus, King of blessedness and of eternal glory, and declaring your faithfulness, your fidelity to him. And then, of course, imploring the help of our Blessed Virgin Mother to be our example that we can follow. I did like the last little bit there. Oh, my good angel, bring me to this heavenly company. Leave me not until I have reached them. And I just, you know, we've talked before about how, you know, St. Francis de Sales is imploring us to use our guardian angels as a guide, and how, I don't know, we just haven't thought about that in that kind of a way before. But it's just more of that this is your guy, this is your guide, your buddy, your watchdog. I mean, he is looking out for you. And so definitely, you know, ask him for his help, ask him for his aid. Don't take him for granted. Ask him to never leave your side until you get safely home.
Well, and one of the things that we pray every night with our kids and after every mass is the guardian angel prayer. And that, you know, to light, to guard, to rule, to guide. It's the very last.
And it makes sense. Yeah. You're right. We pray that every day, right before bedtime. Yeah. With our kids too. And duh, you know, but it's like, wait, just stop and actually listen to the words you're saying.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's probably going to do it for us today, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Please like, subscribe, share, rate, Anything that you can do, do, please. And don't forget to check us out on readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm. Join in the conversation or just, you know, share that with other people. Help us kind of grow this community. And with that, Jason, love you, bye.
Love you, bye.